we've realized that in a lot of countries in Latin America, Mexico, Brazil, Argentina, not so much, Colombia, there have been efforts to defund election authorities, to take authority away from election authorities, and to change even their composition to try to sort of control their decisions and have them just a lot of politically motivated situations that we realized that we needed to align with those election authorities if we were to defend that line, which is the front line of democracy, you know, the elections.
The full and free exercise of our sacred right and duty to vote is more important in the long run than the personal hopes or ambitions of any candidate for any office in the land.
You're listening to High Turnout, Wide Margins, an insider's look at election administration hosted by Brianna Lennon and Eric Fay.
Well, welcome to another exciting episode of High Turnout, Wide Margins. I am Eric Fay, Director of Elections in St. Louis County, Missouri, with my co-host,
Brianna Lennon. I'm the County Clerk in Boone County, Missouri.
And our guest today is, go ahead and introduce yourself.
I am Eduardo Repilloso Fernandez. I'm the Director General of the Electoral Transparency Foundation.
So before we get into what that entails and what your role is, we like to ask every one of our guests, first off, how did you become involved in elections? What is your election origin story?
I'm originally from Venezuela, and I used to work with a domestic election monitor there called Sumate for about 4 to 5 years. And then I moved to Buenos Aires, Argentina, which is where I started to work with electoral transparency. And I've been working with them for the past 5 years.
When you were in Venezuela, what interested you in becoming involved in the electoral process in the first place?
Well, that's a funny story because my godmother was the coordinator for Sumate in our birth state, the state where I was born. And I moved to a different state to go to college, and I was studying political sciences. And she reached out to me and said, do you want to work for the organization, but in Zulia state, which is where I lived. And she put me in touch with the state coordinator, and that's where I started to get involved in everything about elections. At that point, I didn't really know the election world was so wide and there were so many things to do, like election observation, election studies. So for me, it was eye-opening. And it's just, there was just no turning back. I dedicated to this.
So can you go a little bit into your current role and what it entails and what kind of drew you to it?
Yes. I realize Director General seems like a fancy title, but that really, really means that I just direct generally. I generally do a lot of things. Because we're an NGO, we're a nonprofit. And I know nonprofits and some election authorities, we relate to this. We don't have a lot of resources, so we have to kind of make do with what we have. So I do a little bit of everything. I do direct fundraising efforts. Just pretty much applying to grants, just looking for partnerships, both in Argentina and internationally. And with those grants, we just do a lot of research. We also do election observations, so I also coordinate those missions. Election observation is one of the things that we do sort of sporadically, and because election observation, not a lot of people know this, but there's several modalities to that. So there's big election observation missions that have like 200 observers deployed all over the country. And there's small election observation missions with like 5 or 6 short-term observers specialized in like different areas of expertise. And so one of the things that I handle too is that precisely. I just coordinate everything that has to do with those deployments in different countries. Most of the countries that we deploy in are Latin American countries. And our organization was just brought into the Latin America has a big tradition of election observation, a longstanding tradition. So there's a lot of organizations that do this sort of work. But most of them are multilateral organizations, meaning that they group governments. And so like the OAS, the European Union also brings in election observation missions a lot to Latin America. And there's also professional organizations like UNIORE, which and AMEA, which are like associations of national election authorities. So we are the only civil society organization that's doing this in an international level in Latin America. So we get invited by the election authorities to deploy election observation missions in those countries.
So as a civil society organization, do you have a different outlook or a different role, or are you looking for something different than the OAS or the EU when they're conducting a mission?
Yes. Well, the main purpose of our organization, as we are comprised of academics and election experts, it's really to generate an exchange between them and election authorities. So we do foster a network of local election observers, a lot like Pledge in the United States, but for Latin American local election officials. And we bring them over to these election observation missions, and we do organize electoral programs and conferences to kind of generate this exchange and learn as much as we can from that election, and also convey to the electoral authority in our observation report all of the things that we think could be beneficial for them as well to implement or to look into. So in our case, it's about enriching that exchange. It's really about having these experiences and best practices on election administration being exchanged, rather than, for example, the OAS, which is they bring in 200 observers and they deploy it, and then they just present their report to the election authority.
On the research side of things, you mentioned that seems like you go into very specific areas of elections, and one of your most recent research reports was on data privacy for voters, and that sounds fascinating to me. And I was wondering if you could go a little bit into why it was important now to talk about that and what some of the findings were.
So we have an initiative called DemoTech, which is essentially the initiative through which we promote debate around the responsible implementation of technology in elections, emphasis on the responsible part of that. And so we started working on data sort of by accident, because we were looking into tech companies and the digital solutions that they provide. And in doing so, we realized that, you know, some of the best practices that are around do include data privacy, open data in elections. And so in when it comes to data privacy, we started sort of to look for partners to kind of explore that a little bit, because it seemed like an unexplored side of the election process. The data in when you're organizing an election, at least in Latin America, that happens a lot. You have an authority that is separate from the election authority that handles all the birth certificates and death certificates and that sort of thing. So the register recorder is not the authority that's organizing the election. It's a separate entity. So and sometimes it's not a register recorder, sometimes it's the government and the register recorder. And so citizen data seems to just go around a lot and go through a lot of hands. And so there have been leaks, important data leaks of sensible data, private data from voters and citizens. And we just thought that it was important to have a good idea of what in Latin America, because the study that you're referring to is a data privacy protection in Latin America, to have a very good idea of what the legislation is, of who is implementing that, who is enforcing those laws, and what happens if there's a breach, and what happens if you break the law as a public sector institution handling that sort of data. And we realized that aside from Brazil and perhaps Argentina and Mexico, there's not a lot of the law and the legislation is very underdeveloped in that sense. And so we think it's very important, because when it comes to private, sensitive information, your information, if that gets leaked or if that gets shared or made public, you could be micro-targeted with campaigns. Well, first of all, your right to privacy is breached because, you know, you're not supposed, you know, your address and that sort of information should not be shared with, at least that's what we sort of believe in when we're in doing these studies in Latin America. And so what we did was that we put together a dashboard. The report is only available in Spanish, like the full report. But the dashboard, you can actually change the language. So you can go from Portuguese to Spanish to English. And the data is all there to be downloaded. So there's a, we partnered with Privacy International, which is a non a British nonprofit located in London. And they we were able to sort of come with this. They have an elections checklist. So they have like a checklist to kind of review whether you're complying with certain standards, international standards, when it comes to data privacy protection. And so we used that checklist and we applied it to every case that we reviewed in Latin America. And that's how we came up with the index. That it's not supposed to work as a ranking. I realized that if you tweak the or filter in the dashboard, it will come up in an order. But that's not really what the intention was. The intention was to identify those countries where work could be done and things could be improved. And sometimes it's not the fault of the election authority. A lot of the times it's not the fault of the election authority because there's no legislation for that. There's no budget for that. There's just no awareness of how important this is sometimes. And so for us, it was just about raising awareness about this issue and identifying those things where we could, you know, we don't lobby for legislation. That's not what we do. But we do try to raise awareness because the election authority does have legislative initiatives. So we always kind of, you know, recommend them that, you know, this or that thing should be discussed with legislators so that, you know, at least there's a framework to protect that data. So the study is available in our website, transparenciaelectoral.org. And yeah, the idea is for that, it's an all open data, it's a dashboard, you can download everything, you can download all of the responses to the checklist, and all the links to the legislation and everything. So we're updating it this year, because it's an ever-evolving situation. But that's pretty much what how that study came to be and what's available.
Hello, I'm Eric Fay, Director of Elections in St. Louis County, Missouri, and you're listening to High Turnout, Wide Margins, a podcast where we explore local election administration.
No, I find it really fascinating because so much voter data in the United States is public, and not all of the personal identifying information is, but some component of it, name and address and oftentimes birth date are, and that's pretty surprising, I think, to a lot of voters that anybody can just ask for that information. It's available. And I also, you know, now that we're having these conversations about interfacing with the federal government more, and we've already had for a long time incorporated into our state voter registration databases things from the federal government, like our Social Security Administration data or DMV data. But very rarely do we have any conversations about how any of that data is kept safe. People that are doing online voter registration, we don't have any conversations about how long you should keep that data on your server, what kind of protections are in place if a voter uses your website to submit a voter registration. And I think that that's something that would be beneficial for us to start having. And I'm wondering, since you mentioned that you worked with a British NGO too, what was their, did they see anything that they wanted to continue that conversation in other countries, other international conversations? Or maybe they didn't. Maybe they were just like, we're going to keep this focused on you guys right now.
Yeah, it's just that our area of expertise is Latin America. So they really rely on us to kind of convey all of these things to, I mean, we think and they think that we could, this is one of the areas that we should focus on. Like in the case of The big difference with Latin America and the United States is that it's very centralized. The election authority is usually very centralized. There's one election authority, and there's local offices to that election authority. Even in the truly decentralized countries, federal countries in Latin America, Brazil, Mexico, and Argentina, they still have a national role of, what would you call that, a voter roster. So in those cases, what they have done is that they, political parties are able to audit that information, but there is always safeguards in place so that that data is not shared with whom they shouldn't. And like, for example, in Mexico, there's a penalty if you use that data to sort of do campaigning and to micro-target voters and that sort of thing. There's a penalty involved for that. And so they use codes to kind of trace back who used what data so that political parties are aware that they should not be misusing or mistreating that personal data of voters, you know, that they have access only for the purposes of auditing their voter registration. And so I think that's really the way to go, because if you have, if your data is available for anybody to download, it just opens the doors to a lot of this, a lot of misuse of personal data. In the UK, one of the examples that and this goes to show just how culturally different we are. You know, culturally speaking, it's very different in Latin America than it is in the US or in Western Europe. In the UK, you could go to a city council, and based on, you know, there's a lot of safeguards for this. It's not just anybody that can go. But it called our attention that you could link a ballot that you cast, I don't know, in an election 5 years ago, and a voter could go to the city council and request that ballot that they submitted at some point in time in an election, right? And for us, the fact that you could link a ballot to a voter, that was strange because, the person I was talking to, I told him, is this really what happens? I mean, in Latin America, that system would be terribly misused, you know? And he said, because I asked him, what if anybody else wanted to get access to your ballot and see how you voted? And his answer was, why would anybody want to do that?
So changing gears a little bit from Brianna's privacy inquiry.
It's fascinating.
Which is fascinating. So I know from experience, whenever an organization is conducting observation or evaluation of an election or an election authority, it can be adversarial. It can be, you know, daunting for the election office to be observed. So your organization has been doing this for a number of years. In general, what is your organization's relationship with the election authorities, the election offices that you're observing or are working with? Is it more adversarial? Is it collegial? Something in between? What would you say?
Well, Electoral Transparency Foundation was born in Argentina about 13 years ago. And at first, we were a domestic election monitor before we went international. And there's something about CSOs and NGOs and nonprofits that tend to treat the counterparts in an adversarial way, because we're doing advocacy and we have to, sometimes a statement needs to be disruptive to get attention. You know, that was kind of the point of those sort of actions. And so we also advocated, at least internally in Argentina, for laws to include domestic election observation. But then when we sat down with election authorities, we realized that, you know, there was all the good intention to do all of these things, but they didn't have the resources to do any of that, any of the things that we were asking for. So on top of all the things that they had to do, everything that they're required to do, they had CSOs and NGOs requesting more of them without them having any more resources to do that. And so that really made us, at some point, I think it was about 4 years ago, that we said, I think this focus needs to shift a little bit. Internationally, it's a different situation because when we went international, you have, there's a declaration of principles of election, international election observation signed in 2005 in the UN, promoted by a lot of organizations, mostly from the US, that promoted a code of conduct of the domestic, of the international election observer. It means that your observation when you're abroad, when you're not a local election observation organization, you have to go by certain standards. So you have to be technical in nature, non-biased, and the most important one is you have to be constructive and you have to be collaborative. You have to follow the laws of the country. You know, respect the fact that you're being, you were invited to go there. And some people seem to think that election observation is, we go to a polling station and we start pointing to the things that are being done wrong, you know, and we tell on the election authority, you know, what they're doing wrong. You shouldn't be doing that, or, you know, and it's not really like, if we are to fully conduct ourselves following that code of conduct for international election observers, we should really be a statue just in a corner, jotting everything down, everything that we see. We should have access to everything that is being done and to see everything and all the processes and everything, but we are not to be disruptive of that process. So we put everything in a form, in our case, you know, we have a an agreement with another NGO that provides us with a system on our phones. So we just fill out the form and we have all the resources there, all the, even if we know the law, you know, even if we know the law from top to bottom and we know that something's being done wrong, we cannot interrupt that process. It's something that we need to just put down on a form, and then we'll send it to the election authority and said, listen, in these many polling stations, this was happening, and was this not against really what the law says? I mean, this is something that maybe you have to adjust, but it always needs to be with a constructive attitude. And so that has been something that we've been abiding, not just for the international election observation, but also for the domestic election observation that we do in Argentina in this case, because we're registered in Argentina as a domestic election monitor. In fact, we're part of the Global Domestic Election Monitor network, because when we were a domestic election monitor, we joined that network. But now we're an international organization, and we have to abide by those rules, which means being respectful of the election authority, being respectful of their authority. And also, we've realized that in a lot of countries in Latin America, Mexico, Brazil, Argentina, not so much, Colombia, There have been efforts to defund election authorities, to take authority away from election authorities, and to change even their composition to try to sort of control their decisions and have them just a lot of politically motivated situations that we realized that we needed to align with those election authorities if we were to defend that line, which is the front line of democracy, you know, the elections.
What did we, is there anything that you wanted to mention that we didn't cover or we didn't ask about?
I always finish with, when people ask me, why are elections, you know, so important to you? I always, and I guess this is something of a cheat code, because it's not really, and not everybody can relate, but I come from a country where we don't have free and fair elections anymore, which is Venezuela. And for me, I feel like I'd value that more. And every time I go to a country where I observe, you know, just people voting, you know, however they want, and having their voices heard, it just makes me feel, I guess, jealous a little bit, but also happy that it's still happening elsewhere, you know, even if we don't have that right anymore. And I think that I always try to convey that sense of, you know, value what you have and cherish it and try and protect it, because it's something that it can get easily lost. So I always try to just convey that to the people that I work with. Anyway, whereas it's a capacity building program or it's an election observation mission, anywhere I go, I just try to, because you know, if you succeed, we can make sure that elections are remain the only, you know, way to access power. And I think that's very important.
You've been listening to High Turnout, Wide Margins, a podcast that explores local election administration. I'm your host, Eric Fay, alongside Brianna Lennon. A big thanks to KBIA and the Election Center for making this podcast possible. Our managing editor is Rebecca Smith. Managing producer is Aaron Hay. Our associate producer is Katie Quinn. And our digital producer is Mark Johnson. This has been High Turnout, Wide Margins. Thanks for listening.